Welcome to Global Journalist on KBIA. This is the program that says mid-Missourians, indeed many Americans, are interested in international news. I'm Stuart Lurie of the Missouri School of Journalism. The war against terrorism, begun by President George W. Bush 6 months ago, has now become perhaps inextricably bound together with an Arab-Israeli war that is over 50 years old, and the United States is being drawn more deeply into it. The Bush administration appears bent on making war with Iraq, which it has named as part of an axis of evil that threatens the world. The administration wants to remove Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein from power, by force if necessary, and that could take a commitment of hundreds of thousands of American troops. The Arab world is not at all comfortable with that goal. In fact, there is little support in the Middle East and South Asia for it, and there is more pressure being put on the United States to stop the escalating of killing in the West Bank and Gaza Strip by Israeli troops and in Israel by suicidal Palestinians. To discuss these complicated relationships in the Arab world, our guests today are, in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, Jamal Khashoggi, Deputy Chief of Arab News. In Sana'a, Yemen, Faris Sanabani, Publisher and Editor-in-Chief of the Yemen Observer, an English-language newspaper there. In Atlanta, Octavia Nasser, Senior Producer and Anchor of the CNN World Report. And in Washington, Dr. Tamara Kaufman-Wittes, Program Director of the Middle East Institute. Dr. Wittes, let's start in Washington. How is the United States going to do, do you think, at untangling all of the complications that it has gotten itself involved in?
Well, the U.S. administration, any administration, tries to treat the various issues in its Middle East basket as though they were distinct and separable. And I think increasingly the Bush administration is finding that from the perspective of those in the region, these issues aren't separable. And when Arab states contemplate supporting regime change in Iraq or a U.S. military strike against Iraq, they can't help but feel the pressure that they're already under from their publics because of violence in Israel and the West Bank and Gaza. So one way or another, the administration is finding itself drawn again and again to the Israeli-Palestinian crisis and will somehow have to at least manage that crisis and tamp it down before it will be able to achieve its other goals in the region.
Let's go to Saudi Arabia. Explain to us, if you would, Mr. Khashoggi, just precisely what the relationship is between the administration's push against Iraq and the situation in Israel and Palestine.
Okay, it is a very interesting predicament. We in Saudi Arabia, we would like to see a regime change in Iraq. We would like, we much rather to have a friendlier regime in Iraq, whom we can deal with, whom we can trust, whom we can work as an Arab to an Arab. But in the same time, we cannot work with the Americans to bring freedom to the Iraqis while the Americans are depriving freedom to the Palestinians. We see the Americans, what they can do in Palestine. We see what kind of pressure they can exercise on the Israelis. They did that in the last week, and it gave fruits. Sharon changed positions. We saw Sharon retaliating against the Palestinian population, like what he used when he used to do when some attack take place inside Israel. So we see Americans working in Israel, and we would like to see more of that to bring a just peace there in the region.
And Mr. Sanabani, in Yemen, there is also, as we understand it here in this country, something of a terrorist movement that the United States feels it might want to get involved in there. Is this seen as feasible and necessary and desirable in your country?
Yemen started ahead of the September 11th attack on to fight terrorism. Yemen felt and saw the need to counter and control terrorism and terrorism movement in Yemen. We had some problem with kidnapping tourists. We had some problem with the coal bombing in Aden and so on. The Yemen started way ahead. Now, when it became, not much attention was paid to it. And to fight terrorism and to control terrorists, you need military assistance plus economical development. During this fight, the world was not focusing on Yemen to support it economically. On the other hand, they were saying, don't go to Yemen, don't invest in Yemen, and so on, protecting that bad image, which makes it easier for terrorist elements to grow and move. Since September 11th, Yemen and the U.S. and the world in general have saw the need to fight and combat this terrorism. They've joined hands, they've done strategies within and understanding the sensitivity of both cultures. Yemeni want Americans to help in terms of military training, in terms of military equipment, in terms of economical assistance. They do not want military on-ground combat in the country because that will bring more problems than solutions.
Part of the problem with terrorism in Yemen is because of the American military presence there. The attack on the destroyer Cole seemed to be indicative of that. Is the anti-American feeling there getting stronger, or is it quieting, or what?
It depends. Nowadays, with the American initiative and sending Zini back, and then with the vice president coming to the region, all those things are making things better and making the public feel better toward the American policy to the Middle East. Again, the Palestinian and Israeli conflict is the number one issue in the mind of people in Yemen, in the Arab world, and in the Islamic world. And as long as American policy keeps to be one-sided in the direction, in the full support, unconditionally of Israel, there will be feeling against Americans and against American interests in the whole region in general.
Yeah. Octavia Nasser, you are the senior producer of the CNN World Report, a program that is dedicated to bringing the news to the American people from different places around the country, as around the world, as it's seen in those countries. Do you get any feeling that attitudes toward the United States are changing one way or another as a result of the war against terrorism?
Not really, not yet. I don't think the world believes that the U.S. administration's efforts are genuine to end the conflict in the Middle East. I think the world believes that the U.S. is one-sided, that the U.S. Stands behind Israel, and it was apparent via the reaction that we got after Mr. Cheney's visit to the Middle East. I mean, he went there to drum up support for a U.S. action against Iraq, and he ended his trip being a mediator between the Israelis and the Palestinians. I think there was a big lesson for the U.S. administration to be learned that naivete has to end, that if the U.S. wants indeed to end the conflict in the Middle East, it can, but it has to be an honest broker in this conflict. And the other lesson that was learned is that the Arabs finally figured it out, that they need to get together and have one voice and not be intimidated by the West, by the U.S. in particular, and have a firm stand against those policies in the Middle East. So I think we came out after this trip, we came out with a very clear picture that the U.S. failed in its attempt to drum up support to attack Iraq, and the Arabs succeeded in having a united stand. Now, where this is going to lead us, I think that the future, next week and the next month, will prove whether the U.S. is indeed an honest broker, or if it can be an honest broker, and then we will see the reaction, the world reaction to those efforts.
I think that Octavia is bringing up a very important point, which is that we see among the Arab states a new kind of diplomacy and approach that's allowing the U.S. and the Arab world to work in concert, so to speak, to try and improve the situation between Israelis and Palestinians. Whereas last year there was a lot of finger-pointing, and the U.S. was saying to the Arab states, you need to be more engaged in the conflict, and the Arab states were saying to the Bush administration, you need to be more engaged. Today, the Arab states are working with an initiative put forward by Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia that will be discussed at the Arab summit in Beirut next week, and at the same time, the U.S. is working to achieve a ceasefire. So while they're not working on parallel tracks, the Arab states, rather they are working on parallel tracks, but the Arab states and the United States are working toward complementary goals right now, and that's a change and a very important one.
Well, I wanted to get to that Arab League meeting next week in Beirut. First of all, is it now pretty apparent that the Palestinians are going to be able to send Yasser Arafat to that meeting? Are the Israelis going to allow that? And secondly, if that does happen, the Saudi peace initiative that was put forth, is that going to gain wide acceptance at that meeting? Who wants to deal with that? Mr. Khashoggi, maybe? Do you want to start?
Yes, let me go for this. I think, personally, I feel that Yasser Arafat would be much stronger in Ramallah than in Beirut. I would like him to stay in Ramallah. I think he would be more powerful, more closer to his people, and not under any conditions by Sharon. The other point is regarding the Saudi initiative. Yes, it is going to be adopted by all Arab nations in Beirut. Probably the Iraqis or the Libyans will have different point of views, but eventually they will go along with everybody else. That's what I expect. And as long as the most important Arab nations are for it, and we should also mention that the Iranians, the Pakistanis, the Malaysians, different Islamic countries come out in support of that initiative. Unfortunately, the Americans and the Israelis have not yet given a really positive response to it. They welcome the initiative. They welcome the part they like, the part that the normalization of relations, but they did not yet accept the condition that Israelis should withdraw from the territories they occupied in the war, 1967 war.
Yeah.
And
Mr.
the Americans are still interested in this tenet agreements, which really will drag on with no clear end.
Okay, if I can just ask you one more question. You say you think Arafat is better off in Ramallah than in Beirut. If he stays in Ramallah, he apparently cannot meet with Vice President Cheney next week. Cheney wants to meet him, I think, in Cairo. Do you think that meeting should not take place as well?
Yeah, the meeting in itself, in essence, is not that important. Cheney was part of the inner cabinet of Israel. He took the place of Lieberman, a hardliner in Israel. So really, I think Arafat, if I was in Arafat's shoes, I would not be that enthusiastic about the meeting. Cheney has taken other side completely. It doesn't matter if he meets Cheney or not, but he should stay with his people, maintain his resistance, get the Americans and the Israeli side changing.
Okay,
I think Jamal is misinterpreting, actually. I think that Cheney's offer to meet with Arafat outside of the Palestinian Authority areas is actually a way of putting pressure on Israel, because if Israel refuses to let Arafat leave the territories, that looks like they're slapping the Vice President of the United States in the face. Yes, of course, there are conditions Israel has set before it will let Arafat go to Beirut, but Israel knows that if it doesn't let Arafat leave the territories, his power and his reputation only grow. Moreover, Prince Abdullah has made clear that if Arafat is not at the summit next week, he's not going to table that peace proposal at all.
So a lot hinges on this decision
on the part of Israel. I think they're under tremendous pressure, and I would be shocked if Arafat were not in Beirut next week.
No, this is revised. Now, with or without Arafat, the Saudi initiative will go to Beirut, will be adopted in Beirut, and the Palestinians know that, and they accepted that.
Okay, we have to take a break now. This is Global Journalist on KBIA, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Global Journalist on KBIA. You may listen to this program again, ask questions, or make comments by going to www.globaljournalist.org or here in Mid-Missouri by calling us at 573-882-9641. Just before the break, we were discussing the Arab League summit meeting in Beirut and whether or not Yasser Arafat would be there. I'd like to bring Mr. Sanabani into this discussion and see if he has anything to add to what Dr. Wittes and Mr. Khashoggi just said.
Yes. Actually, there's a couple things. One is in regard to Arafat's visit. I feel I wouldn't like to be in his shoes. I think Sharon has made it clear that he will allow him to go there in one condition, that he has to speak what Sharon wants. Otherwise, he will not let him back in. So that was a sign that he will let him go to Lebanon. And we in Yemen and the Arab world fear that this initiative or this cooling down just days before the Arab summit, and we're afraid of what might come after the Arab summit. If things do not cool down, I'll tell you, if the we feel, or I think that the Prince Abdullah initiative is the last chance. If it is not taking, I think it will be just mass destruction. As you understand now, we have satellites, we have TV. The Arab leaders now, they see firsthand. They hear women and children in Palestine calling their names. They're human. It's getting them in the heart. Also the people of Arabia, they feel pain when they see families killed and destroyed and buildings destroyed and jobless people and people of their blood and flesh and religious background is being destroyed. This is causing a lot of pain, thus pressurizing their leaders and political party to act and react.
I think
that this initiative should be taken seriously by both.
Mr. Sanabani, excuse me, I hope you won't mind me saying that there is bloodshed and pain right now on both sides in this situation, both in the occupied territories and in Israel itself. And
absolutely.
I think everybody wants to see all of it stop. Octavia Nasser.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, Octavia, if I can bring you back into the discussion, do you see any possibility that that Arafat might actually be expelled from the occupied territories?
I think I really don't understand people when they say things are going to calm down or things are going to quiet down. I don't see any reason why things will quiet down. Nothing happened to change the facts on the ground. So I think it's again, naive of anyone to think that Arafat has any power to stop anything. I mean, we just need to look at the situation as it is. You have closure of the territories. You have tightening of the closures. Arafat has been under sort of house arrest for the last 4 months, and the violence is growing. Nothing is winding down. Nothing is quieting down. I don't even see a reason why things will quiet down. I think I totally agree with you, Stu, that inside Israel and inside the Palestinian territories, there's pain, there's bloodshed, and there's growing concern over the Israeli policy in the occupied territories. And I think we need to see that clearly. We need to understand that the Israeli people are against those policies. And right now, there is there's something very interesting going on. I totally agree with what was said earlier, that Israel will allow Arafat to go to Cairo to meet with Vice President Cheney. Israel will allow Arafat to go to Beirut for the summit because there is no other choice for Israel but to do that. But at the same time, Israel is threatening that any act of violence is going to be blamed on Arafat, which means that, yes, he might be expelled from the Palestinian territories. He might be told not to come back. I mean, on the one hand, you have Israel saying, we will allow him to go. We won't allow him to go. We control where he sits and we control where he lives. But at the same time, we want him to stop the violence. Who is in control? I think this is the big question right now. Who is in control of that situation?
Octavia, if I understood what Mr. Sanabani was just saying, he thinks that Arafat is being turned into a puppet of Ariel Sharon. Do you or Dr. Wittes, do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think this has been one of the sources of Palestinian disillusionment with the peace process since the interim agreement took hold, which installed Arafat as head of the Palestinian Authority, because there are so many functions that he was asked to take on behalf of the Israelis, particularly with respect to protecting Israeli security. And so it really did sort of give the occupation the visage of Arafat and did him a lot of damage in the process. Now, whether he chooses to go to Beirut or to Cairo or not, I'm sure that those considerations will come into play. But I think from the Israeli perspective, They recognize that an Arafat who's free to travel from world capital to world capital drumming up support is a much more dangerous Arafat for them, diplomatically and in terms of mobilizing Palestinians on the ground to continue their struggle. So I don't think Israel would see it in its interests, however much it might wish to, at an emotional level, expel Arafat from the territories.
Okay. The Israelis think that Arafat talks out of both sides of his mouth, when he speaks English to the Western world, he says, yes, I would like a settlement. But when he speaks Arabic to his own people, he is doing really nothing to try to subdue terrorism. What do you think about that, Dr. Wittes?
Well, I think it was important in mid-December when he made a speech on Palestinian television and radio in Arabic calling for a ceasefire and laying out some of the reasoning behind that decision. That was a very important moment. Unfortunately, the follow-up was not sustained, and then, of course, there was the incident with the ship full of weapons that was apparently destined for the Palestinian Authority that threw a lot of doubt on his credibility. But if he were to make that kind of speech again today, if he were to follow through on that by consistent effort to arrest those responsible for planning and executing violence, I think that would speak volumes to Israelis. Now, that isn't to say that that would easily wash away the mistrust that's been built up among the Israeli public over the last year and a half, but it would be a beginning. And, of course, on the Palestinian side as well, there's a lot of mistrust of Israeli intentions that has to be repaired.
Okay. And let me jump in here for a second. I think it's very important that we differentiate. When we say the Israelis, I think we're totally misrepresenting the Israelis that are for peace and the Israelis who are opposing the Israeli government's actions in the Palestinian territories and vis-a-vis the Palestinians. I think we're totally disregarding their point of view. I don't think it's right to go ahead and say the Israelis. That's not true. In the streets of Israel today, you have a huge movement against the Israeli government and against Mr. Sharon.
Octavia, I wish it were a huge movement. It's unfortunately very marginalized.
It's not. I totally disagree with you. And I think this is where we're making the big mistake, because we are looking at what the leaders are doing. We are looking at what the, just like Stuart said earlier, there is bloodshed in both places, in both Israel and the Palestinian territories, but people choose not to think of that, not to talk about that. Why? Because they are looking at what Arafat is doing. Well, look at what his people are going through. Look at what the Palestinians are suffering. Look at what the Israelis are going through. You know how many Israelis will tell you, I don't want to serve in the Israeli army today. This is a huge question. Why aren't we talking about it? Let's talk about these Israelis. Let's talk about the Palestinians, the victims of this bloodshed. I think we are totally disregarding the civilians. We're totally disregarding the human life that's being wasted for political reasons. And I think this is where the U.S. can step in and take action and tell both parties, look, the responsibility falls on both shoulders. Let's look at the history of the Israeli leadership, and then we don't even need anyone to talk about this anymore.
Octavia, if I can break in on you, let's just give Dr. Wittes a last word on this subject, and then I would like to move specifically to a discussion of the situation in Iraq. Dr. Wittes, do you want to respond to Octavia?
Just very briefly, unfortunately, the peace camp in Israel was really devastated by the events of the past 18 months. There is still a peace camp. It's very small. It's very marginalized. Polls today in Israel show that the Labor Party and the left-wing parties generally would not be able to achieve even one-third of the seats in the Knesset, which would mean there's no possibility for a Labor-led pro-peace government emerging in Israel right now. That being the case, we have to face the government that exists and that is likely to remain in power. And that the same goes on the Palestinian side. There are many in the West and in Israel who would wish that Arafat were no longer head of the authority, but he was elected head of the authority. He's who the Palestinians want to represent them, and he's who we must deal with.
Okay.
Stuart.
Yes.
This is Faris from Yemen. Could I have one word and add one comment on this?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think we have a very good example on dealing between the Arabs and the Israelis in Lebanon. You know how bloody it was between Lebanon and or Hezbollah and Israel. head for head, one from this side, one from that side. And when Israel withdrew unconditionally from that area and gave it back, look at it, it's quiet now. And I think that is the best solution for the Israel to withdraw from the Palestinian territory unconditionally, immediately, and then we wait and see. I think they'll have the support of the Arabs, and the whole thing will move into trust and to solving the whole problem.
Yeah, Faris, I do want to move on, but I only want to say that there is a story in the New York Times this morning about how dangerous the Israelis feel the northern border with Lebanon is at this time. But at any rate, let's move to Iraq. Let's start with you, Jamal. Is the United States really going to go to war against Iraq, and how much support will Saudi Arabia give to that that drive?
It looks like that the United States wants to go to war against the Iraqi regime, but since there hasn't been a movement of troops, then I doubt that we would see a war in the next a couple of months, maybe in the summertime. We in Saudi Arabia, as I told you earlier, it's a very interesting predicament. We want to get rid of the regime. We want to have a friendly neighbor in Iraq, someone whom we can work with economically, politically, socially. But in the same time, how can you work with the Americans on this plan while our Palestinians are being tortured by American weapons?
Jamal, I think also it's going to mean a lot of American troops in your country.
Yes, it would require that, but also they got the Turkey, they got Kuwait. I think the Kuwaitis would be more willing. The change in Iraq requires a ground troop because the most important thing is we need to secure the situation after the regime collapsed. There will be a lot of inter-killing between Iraqi people. There is so much hatred created by that regime between the Sunni and the Shi'i and the Kurds. And if the regime collapsed, the Kurds and the Shi'i from the south and from the north, they will march to the center and start slaughtering the Sunnis, and that is dangerous. We in Saudi Arabia, we don't like to see that. And that's what probably will get us involved in the Iraqi situation.
Okay, Jamal, I'm sorry, but we are out of time, and I hate to cut this discussion short. Our guests today have been Dr. Tamara Kaufman-Wittes in Washington, Octavia Nasser in Atlanta, Jamal Khashoggi in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, and Faris Sanabani in Sana'a, Yemen. Our director is Pat Akers, and our producer, Sarah Andrea Fajardo. For all, I'm Stuart Lurie, Global Journalist. We'll be back next week.